In each case, I personally failed. But what I say very often is that I've lived to see my lost causes found.
Pauli Murray really began expansively exploring a fluid gender identity in their 20s. So in the 1930s, this is a time where it was dangerous enough to be a Black person. I learned that at least one entire biography of Pauli Murray has been completely wiped from the National Park Service.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Greece to bar gay men from surrogacy access. Russia declares Elton John AIDS Foundation undesirable. And anti-diversity bullies try to bury Pauli Murray's legacy. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 5th, 2025. Greek men, gay or straight, won't be able to access surrogacy services if Parliament passes a law the government says it's preparing. Minister of Justice Yarios Florides announced on April 1st that it's an effort to clarify the legal definition of the phrase inability to carry a pregnancy. As he explained to reporters, "We are now clarifying unequivocally that the concept of inability to carry a pregnancy does not refer to an inability arising from one's gender. The ban does not include women regardless of sexual orientation." Florides said, "In other words, a woman may be unable to carry a pregnancy whether she is in a male-female couple, a female same-sex couple, or on her own." Greece opened to civil marriage and adoption to same-gender couples last year, although it caused serious defections by opposing lawmakers from the ruling party. The male surrogacy ban appears to be an effort by the Greek government to appease conservative forces in parliament and in the politically powerful Greek Orthodox Church. They all had posed vocal opposition to marriage and adoptions equality. Statements by the church suggested that the children of same-gender couples were nothing more than accessories and companion pets. Conservatives warned that queer families would confuse parental roles and weaken the traditional family. It's not known when the new statutes might be introduced in Parliament.
Russian officials are exiling the Elton John AIDS Foundation. The Prosecutor General's office declared the charitable group undesirable because of its support for queer rights. If the foundation attempts to continue operating in Russia, anyone officially associated with it can be criminally prosecuted. Despite its longtime operation in the country offering education and treatment programs, a statement posted to the Prosecutor General's website office claims, to a greater extent, they are focused on the promotion of non-traditional sexual relations, Western family models, and gender reassignment. The Russian government officially believes in an international LGBT movement, a non-existent global organization. In reviewing the so-called no-promo-homo laws against alleged gay propaganda, the country's highest court condemned the mythical queer menace as extremist in 2023. Sir Elton John is one homo that gets plenty of promo in Russia. The rock star plays to sold-out concerts there, while being a vocal critic of what he calls the country's vicious anti-queer legislation. He's offered to introduce the Russian president to some real-life LGBTQ communities, but Vladimir has thus far declined. The now-banned in Russia Elton John AIDS Foundation is registered in both the U.S. and U.K. Its devastated staff said in a press statement, "For more than two decades, we have worked in collaboration with federal and non-governmental partners in Russia to provide hundreds of thousands of people with vital HIV services, including testing, treatment, and care. Today's decision will undoubtedly endanger lives and disrupt critical HIV prevention efforts."
Conversion therapy is against the law in New South Wales as of midnight on April 4th. The measure cleared the upper house of the Australian state's legislature 12 months ago. It's now a crime to practice the debunked cure that's supposed to change sexual orientation or gender identity through a combination of counseling and prayer. Practitioners face civil charges of discrimination. The laws do not violate freedom of religion statutes. General religious teachings or expressions of religious principles won't be impacted. Parents can still discuss sexual orientation or gender identity with children. New South Wales Attorney General Michael Daly was eager to stress, "There's still plenty of room to respectfully practice your religion. What we are talking about are attempts to get someone to suppress or change a fundamental part of themselves." The Australian Capital Territory and the states of Victoria, Queensland, and South Australia have also banned conversion therapy.
Anti-queer hate speech is now illegal in the Australian state of Victoria. Offenders face up to 5 years in prison. Parliament passed legislation on April 2nd to add gender, sexuality, and disability to the current protected categories of race and religion. The 5-year prison maximum applies to incitement of hatred or physical threats. Injured parties will also have more ways to take legal action and seek financial compensation. The private members' bill to expand the anti-hate speech protections was introduced about 5 years ago. The government was pressured to advance it after noticeably rising anti-Semitism in the state led to the firebombing of the Adas Israel Synagogue in Ripponlea last year. Jewish groups across the state strongly backed the new inclusive legislation. However, there are both religious and political conservative critics who warn that hate speech laws threaten freedom of speech. Equality Australia's Anna Brown said the anti-vilification laws are about cutting off hate at its source. In her words, "Attacks on the queer community have escalated in recent years, and harassment, discrimination, and violence shockingly remain a lived experience for many people. This legislation makes it clear that hate is not just against humanity, it's against the law."
A law forcing Montana trans people to use sex-segregated facilities according to their birth certificate gender is on temporary hold. State District Court Judge Shane Bonata's injunction calls the law motivated by animus and supported by no evidence that its restrictions advance its purported purpose to protect women's safety and privacy. Republican Governor Greg Gianforte signed House Bill 130 into law on March 27th. It claims to reaffirm the longstanding meanings of sex, male and female, and to preserve women's restrooms, changing rooms, and sleeping quarters for women in facilities where women have traditionally been afforded privacy and safety from acts of abuse, harassment, sexual assault, and violence committed by men. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit are being represented by the ACLU of Montana. Legal Director Alex Raitt noted in a media statement that Venata's ruling provides enormous relief to trans Montanans across the state. Gianforte spokesperson Caitlin Price told reporters that the governor will defend the law and the privacy and safety of women and girls. Price quipped, "We're not surprised to see far-left activists run to the courts to stop this common-sense law." Judge Venata's order will be in effect until an April 21st hearing. He'll then consider whether the measure should continue to be blocked while the lawsuit challenging its constitutionality moves forward.
Finally, LGBTQ pride flags are now banned at all public schools and government buildings in Utah, the first U.S. state to do so. Republican Governor Spencer Cox allowed it to become law without his signature because he said a veto would almost certainly have been overridden by the Republican-dominated legislature. Cox issued a half-hearted apology to the LGBTQ community for the blood sport of politics, but activists called his action cowardly. The ban goes into effect on May 7th. state or local government buildings will be fined $500 a day for flying any flag other than the United States flag, the Utah state flag, military flags, or a short list of others specifically approved by the lawmakers. The bill's Republican sponsors argue that it's meant to encourage political neutrality from teachers and other government employees. Opponents cautioned that its real intent is to erase LGBTQ+ expression and punish cities and towns that diverge from the Republican legislature's political positions. For example, Salt Lake City welcomes annual Pride Month celebrations every June with widespread rainbow flag displays. Every night since the bill's passage, officials have defiantly bathed Salt Lake City and county buildings in rainbow lights. The law also forbids Utah teachers from hanging any restricted flag in their classroom. Teacher J. Ryan Wadoops sent a courageous letter to state Republicans declaring, "You will have to fire me before I take down my pride flag." He defended what he called a symbol of support for LGBTQ+ youth, saying, "A pride flag does not promote homosexuality any more than a U.S. flag promotes invading Greenland or taking over Canada." That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending April 5th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you. Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Lebeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Ava Davis. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The Nazis lit public bonfires with books in the 1930s. These days, the book burnings are digital. The Trump administration has wasted no time rewriting diversity out of U.S. history. Transgender and gender nonconforming people and causes in particular are being scrubbed from official websites. As the growing right-wing queer cleansing crew reaches the National Historic Landmark dedicated to the legacy of one pioneering human rights leader, This Way Out's David Hunt wanted to experience the Durham, North Carolina childhood home of Pauli Murray.
Pauli Murray has been described as the most important person you've never heard of. Murray, who died in 1985 at the age of 74, played a leading role in some of the most consequential movements of the 20th century. Murray was a pioneering black legal scholar whose ideas laid the foundation for Supreme Court decisions overturning segregation and outlawing discrimination based on sex, a pioneering feminist and co-founder of the National Organization for Women, a pioneering spiritual leader, the first queer saint in the Episcopal Church, a writer, poet, labor organizer, and human rights activist. Murray was jailed for refusing to move to the back of a bus in Virginia in 1940, 15 years before Rosa Parks inspired the Montgomery bus boycott in Alabama with a similar act of civil disobedience. To an America divided and dispirited by racism, demoralized by sexism, and shackled by a suffocating conformity, Pauli Murray brought fresh eyes and a powerful voice for change. But change would not come quickly or easily. "We cannot heal until we face the truth," Murray wrote. Ironically, the inconvenient truth of Murray's life and legacy is now in dispute.
Sorry for the way you choose to see, but I'm not sorry for the way I have to be.
I'm David Hunt. Pauli Murray wasn't always Pauli Murray. Born Anna Pauline Murray in Baltimore, Maryland in 1910, Murray changed their first name to Pauli, spelled P-A-U-L-I, in the 1930s, at a time when they were first questioning their gender identity. Murray sought but was denied hormone therapy and other gender-affirming care. Given the option, Murray might have lived as a transgender man. But that was not to be. We don't know how Murray would define their gender identity or sexuality if they were alive today, or even what pronouns they would use. I'm using they-them pronouns for Murray in this program to reflect the fluid nature of Murray's gender expression. Historian Angela Thorpe Mason, who has studied Murray's personal journals and other writings, says the civil rights leader's gender identity was constrained by the failures of the medical profession and the strictures of the law.
Pauli Murray really began expansively exploring a fluid gender identity in their 20s. So in the 1930s, this is a time where it was dangerous enough to be a Black person. It could be dangerous to be a woman, to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer was even more dangerous. And in Pauli's lived experience, it was quite literally criminal. Pauli Murray was arrested and institutionalized in the 30s and 40s for how they chose to express a male gender identity. And so I think with that context in mind, it helps me to understand why Pauli sort of positioned this journey as private.
I met Mason at Murray's childhood home in Durham, North Carolina, where Mason is executive director of the Pauli Murray Center for History and Social Justice. The home, built by Murray's grandfather in 1898, was named a national treasure by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and a National Historic Landmark by the U.S. government in 2016. The center is also very much a community treasure, offering dozens of tours, dialogues, exhibitions, and educational programs to residents of this multicultural, progressive southern city, where research labs, universities, and hospitals have replaced the once thriving tobacco industry as the major employers. Although Durham clearly has progressed in the years since Murray lived here, the U.S. government, under President Donald Trump, seems determined to move in the opposite direction. A case in point, the National Park Service, responsible for promoting the Pauli Murray home site as a national landmark, has scrubbed its website of the inconvenient truth of Murray's queer identity. Mason picks up the story.
I first caught wind of this happening with the changes that were made to Stonewall's website, the Stonewall National Monument website. And so I figured something was probably going to come down the pipeline to the Pauli Murray Center. I got a Google alert just a few days ago that indeed some language related to Pauli Murray had been scrubbed from National Park Service pages. After doing some additional digging, I learned that at least one entire biography of Pauli Murray has been completely wiped from the National Park Service. And then language related to Pauli's LGBTQIA plus identity has been shifted on other pages. Specifically, Q and T have been taken out of LGBTQ on other pages related to Pauli Murray.
Mason immediately went into action, issuing a media release on behalf of the center, condemning the Park Service changes. "We equally condemn the federal government's actions and stand firm in ours," Mason said. "The Pauli Murray Center will be a space for us to continue to articulate what we know to be true." Mason also reached out to the community, asking people to lodge protests with their congressional representatives and to visit the center to take part in its programs and to support it financially. That may be the best way to preserve Murray's legacy.
Pauli Murray knew what they were on this earth to do, which was a big mission to upend race-based and sex-based discrimination in this moment where we are navigating a federal agency working diligently to obscure Pauli Murray's contributions. We must be invited to step into truth and speak truth to power. Pauli was a queer, gender nonconforming, trans person who contributed transformative work to the civil rights movement, to human rights work, to the feminist movement. Recognizing that, I think, is important within the context of American history, but also I think puts up a mirror to our queer, trans, gender nonconforming, human rights workers who are on the front lines of justice work today. That is life-saving, to say that there is an ancestor that is reflecting back to you is powerful and affirming, and reminds people that they're here for a reason and they deserve to exist.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. It's unfortunate that Pauli Murray's contributions to social justice are not more generally recognized and appreciated.
I like to describe Pauli as an architect, because anywhere you look, you could make the argument that Pauli did it first, or that Pauli built the foundation for it, whatever it is. Wherever you look, quite literally, there Pauli Murray is.
Murray fundamentally shaped how we understand equality and American constitutional jurisprudence. As a student at Howard University in 1944, Murray advanced a novel legal strategy to use the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to challenge Plessy v. Ferguson, the 1896 Supreme Court decision that had legalized racial segregation in public accommodations. Civil rights attorney Thurgood Marshall adopted Murray's legal approach in 1954 in Brown v. Board, the successful bid to overturn Plessy. Murray's scholarship also influenced the movement for gender equality. In 1971, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, then an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, followed Murray's legal playbook, convincing the High Court to apply the Equal Protection Clause to strike down, for the first time, a law discriminating against women. Murray also worked to extend protections in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to cover gender. That led, eventually, to a 2020 Supreme Court decision granting employment protections to LGBTQ people.
Pauli Murray did a lot of things. Pauli Murray was somebody who was really thoughtful about, what does it look like to push outside of these boxes? They didn't stay in boxes. So tried a lot of different things, contributed to a lot of different organizations, walked away from a lot of different organizations, but still with that mission in mind.
Much of Murray's work was done privately, thoughtfully, sitting at a manual typewriter. "One person plus one typewriter constitutes a movement," Murray wrote. Murray employed that typewriter, which is on display at the Pauli Murray Center, to chronicle the story of her family, to write essays on race relations, to compose dissertations on law and politics, to explore Black theology and feminist theory, and to craft poetry. You can trace Murray's personal, professional, and spiritual journey through the thousands of words they set down in type. It was a journey that led to Murray's ordination as a priest in the Episcopal Church in 1977.
Pauli evolves as an elder to a point of literally being like, this is above me now. This is a God issue. You know, she offers something really profound in an interview, like that her work has been a series of failures, but she's lived long enough to see some of her lost causes won.
That interview from the end of Murray's life is preserved on the Pauli Murray Center's website.
I'd like to say here, if you will notice, the questions you've been asking me about my activities, that in not a single one of these little campaigns was I victorious. In other words, in each case, I personally failed. But I have lived to see the thesis upon which I was operating vindicated. And what I say very often is that I've lived to see my lost causes found.
Murray's words are, perhaps, relevant for our time, a time when hard-won victories of the past have come under renewed attack, victories made possible by the courage and resolve of people like Pauli Murray. As the United States government moves to erase the history and memory of the queer, trans, and gender nonconforming activists who came before us, it's important to preserve their voices and reaffirm their causes, now our causes, which are not lost. Not by a long shot.
Hope is a song in a weary throat. Give me a song of hope and a world where I can sing it. Give me a song of faith and a people to believe in it. Give me a song of kindliness and a country where I can live it. Give me a song of hope and love. And a brown girl's heart to hear it.
That was the late human rights leader Pauli Murray reading from her book Dark Testament and Other Poems. I'd like to thank Angela Thorpe Mason, Executive Director of the Pauli Murray Center for History and Social Justice, for talking with me for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael LeBeau and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. Paul McCartney and Wings, Petey Pablo, and Ben Phantom performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Lee Sloan of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CJLY New Denver, Nelson, Crawford Bay, British Columbia, KCEI Taos, New Mexico, WPSU, Bradford, Huntington, Clearfield, Altoona State College, Kane, DuBois, Pennsylvania, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.